Welcome to Brass Tack Sunday for August 12th. I'm Sanka Price, your moderator for today's special program, in which we will discuss the state of the Barbados economy. To put our discussion in context, we'll use highlights from the Central Bank's 2017 end-of-year review and its quarterly reports since then. We'll take a critical look at the decisions for the selected default on Barbados's loan payments and the June 11th mini-budget. And from that discussion, we hope to be able to give Barbadians a greater insight as to the true condition of our economy and the necessary decisions that need to be taken. To help us achieve this, we have in the studio, and from my left, we have the Minister in the Ministry of Finance, Mr. Ryan Strong. We have Internal Auditor Crystal Howell, President of the Barbados Economic Society, Mr. Shane Lowe, and noted regional economist, Ms. Marla Dukaran. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Morning. Good morning, Sanka.
Our producer and the first voice you will hear when you call us this morning at 434-1790 will be Mr. Dennis Johnson. And you can also participate, of course, in the program via WhatsApp at 266-4862. As usual, this special Brass Tack Sunday programs are brought to you the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
For building supplies, big or small, at Williams Metals we have it all.
Angles, flats, cement and doors, lumber, windows and much, much more.
Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form play for boxing.
Big or small, at Williams Metals we have it all. At Williams Metals we have it all.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tack Sunday, where we'll be discussing the state of the Barbados economy. And in less than 500 words, I'll try to bring us up to date as to where we are. Now, according to the Central Bank's 2017 economic review given in February, Governor Cleverton Haynes said, and I'm quoting, the stock of international reserves declined further to $410, unquote. And that represented the equivalent of 6.6 weeks of imports, which is, of course, well below the accepted benchmark of 12 weeks of imports. This was the lowest amount of foreign reserves in 22 years, or since 1995. The governor further revealed that Barbados had lost more than $1 billion in foreign reserves. I repeat, $1 billion in foreign reserves had been lost since 2012. So in the last 6 years, Barbados lost, at that point, in the last 5 years, Barbados had lost $1 billion in foreign reserves. He said that in 2017 alone, the island had lost $274 million in reserves. On that same day in February, the International Monetary Fund's Executive Board, they urged Barbados to take action to, and I'm quoting, build adequate international reserves, unquote. By May, when Governor Haynes delivered his first quarter economic review, he said Barbados's foreign reserves problem is so serious that government is seeking $60 to $70 million in bailout from the private sector through the repatriation of overseas funds by these businesses, similar to what was done back in 1991, which was when the last time the country faced such a crisis. But he warned that these private sector funds will not be enough. Therefore, there was a need for the then government to divest of the National Terminal Oil Company and the Hilton Barbados property. And he said that this needed to be done to fix the foreign reserves problem. Haynes also disclosed that Barbados's reserves at that time, at the end of March, were $423 million, or 6.9 weeks of import cover, as compared to $709.4 million for the same quarter in 2017. The major concern for the governor was the loan payment on the Credit Suisse, for the Credit Suisse loan that we had, and that was due in June, which was the few weeks later, as well as in December. About a week after the May 24th victory of the ruling Barbados Labour Party, Prime Minister Motley announced, to everyone's shock, that Barbados will be suspending payments due on debts owed to external and commercial creditors. Similarly, she said, the government will be endeavouring to make scheduled domestic interest payments. However, domestic creditors will be asked to roll over principal maturities until we reach a restructuring agreement. And we know the reaction from that from a number of economists. And then on June the 11th, date of the mini-budget, which Motley called the Barbados Recovery, Economic and Recovery Plan, she said the plan will be rolled out in three phases and will put the economy on the path of recovery while protecting the integrity of the dollar. Phase one of the plan is intended to reduce the deficit by $183 million over the next 12 months while increasing the island's revenue. Noteworthy is that in phase one, she got rid of the NSRL as well as the road tax, but introduced user fees for garbage collection and sewage. And finally, at the beginning of this month, Governor Haynes announced that the Barbados economy had contracted. And he also suggested that the fiscal situation here is so bad that the government may have to negotiate an extended fund facility with the IMF as opposed to a standby arrangement which is geared towards a shorter term period of engagement. And interestingly though, although there were no foreign currency debt payments, the reserves were only just over $700 million. So that's a snapshot, a very quick snapshot, in less than 500 words, on where we are at. Now, my panel, we have, as I'll repeat, Minister of Finance, in the Ministry of Finance, Mr. Ryan Strawn, and we have Bristol Howell, Internal Auditor, we have Shane Lowe, the President of the Barbados Economic Society, and not a regional economist, Ms. Marla Ducaran. We'll start with the ladies. I see him looking at me. We'll start with the ladies. Ms. Ducaran, your take on the state of the Barbados economy, given the background I just gave?
Thanks for having me, Sanka. Honestly, there's nothing that the governor announced or anything that I have seen in the data that is alarming, given what we know the economic situation to have been and how it has been developing for the past several years. It is noted, however, that the governor, when he made his announcement of what foreign currency reserves look like now, it's actually the highest level for this year, for 2018 so far, which means we had a bit of an increase, and that has a lot to do with the fact that the government suspended payments on all external obligations, as we know. So that is an improvement, but of course, the reasoning for it is it's not really an organic growth in the level of reserves. But to the point that you made about, the fact that the government, today's government, decided to suspend payments on these external debts and that it was a surprise, I wasn't aware that it was a surprise. This is what I was expecting. And so all of this that we're seeing now, to me, is all quite expected. I'm not seeing anything that is unexpected based on what I was thinking would happen. I'm just keen to see what the arrangements with the IMF would look like in the coming weeks and months.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Shane Lowe, you also said it was what is happening in terms of the downgrades that took place, that all these things were expected. Mm-hmm. And I know that there has been some pushback, certainly I heard some pushback from it this morning, that it sounds kind of flippant to say it was expected, but could you explain that?
Well, Sanka, good morning, everyone. So a credit rating assesses your capacity to repay or the probability that you will default on a security. Mm-hmm. And default can be defined a number of ways, but usually it means that you have changed the terms under which you will pay. So if you were to pay me next week, Friday, $10, and you don't pay me, then that is a default. Or if you were to pay me $10, you pay me $5, and that might be a default. When the government on June 1st announced that it would not be paying, and then subsequently as payments came due, it did not pay, then that is considered a default by definition. So when the credit rating agency makes the adjustment to default, then it's not really a surprise. So I think having announced it on June 1st, it really was not very surprising the credit rating agencies reacted in the way they did. In terms of the implications for the country, the cost of borrowing before was very high and prohibitive. This has increased the cost, but the country wasn't borrowing anyway. So you could argue that it doesn't change the decision making. What it does do, of course, is it puts you in a position where even if you did want to borrow, it becomes even more difficult to do that now. But I don't think that this is a surprise, because simply having made that decision, you accepted that, you know, for any logical person, if someone told you I'm not going to pay you, you're not going to give them more money to not pay you back, right?
Crystal, the fact that Barbados only has just over 700 million reserves at the end of the second quarter, and yet we weren't paying any debts, as in, from your experience as an auditor, what does that really say about how bad things are with our foreign reserves?
I don't think you need to be an auditor to understand that the situation is fairly dire. Any person who has a household and has to manage their finances, they would know at what level, if they see their savings fall to a certain amount, how much is going to carry them through. So if you only have enough income in your household to take you through to 6 or 7 weeks, you as a householder would be concerned. So as a country, you'd be even more so, especially as we've set a benchmark at 12 weeks. Since I'm surrounded by so many noted economists, my focus is going to be more on the control side, because we can talk about how we will earn revenue to increase the reserves, how we will cut expenditure. But if we ignore the very critical fact that there are a lot of things that are happening in government that encourage the waste of foreign reserves, we may be wasting more than we bring in or that we cut. And it is going to frustrate persons to know that they're paying this much more in taxes, or you're cutting your belt or tightening your belt so much more, but it's not being managed in a way that it can be used effectively to help the country with the things it really needs. And it has to be diverted to areas that, if proper controls were in place, you would not have had to spend that money again.
Okay. And Mr. Strong, Ryan.
Good morning, everybody.
Your take on all of this.
Well, let me start where Crystal just ended, because my job is control. And the reality is that the economy has been languishing for some time, mm-hmm. To the extent that the lack of control, mm-hmm. and what we have to do now with respect to the level of arrears, mm-hmm. that have built up in the system. And I think I want Barbados to appreciate that there's never been a time in our history where a government has handed over to another government a situation where the discipline of government has been so eroded that effectively you're handing over what essentially is a basket case in terms of the, not just the state of the public finances, but certainly almost every single sector of the economy is pretty much in peril. And I don't say that to necessarily scare anybody, but that's just the reality of the situation that we are confronted with at the moment. And so to the extent that we are in recession, certainly that was anticipated given the lack of action earlier this year. The calling of the election was late in the scheme of things. And so therefore the way forward now really means that this government now has to put together in very short order actually a set of solutions that deals with our debt, deals with our fiscal management, but also deals with foreign exchange problem. Now, under normal circumstances, when I say normal, a government may find itself having to deal with one of these things, but to have a triumvirate of things coming in at the same time means that the swiftness with which we've had to act certainly has caught people by surprise, if you want to use that term, because what seemed like a unmanageable situation prior to the election, now there seems to be a momentum building for resolution. And so from our perspective, we know that the effort to rebuild not just consumer confidence, but business confidence and investor confidence requires that the government act in a manner that is consistent, I think, with the kind of discipline and control that people have grown accustomed to. Of course, we want to be in a position where there's relative certainty with which people can go about their business, whether it's personal or on a commercial side. And it really means that the $1.9 billion in arrears that has been handed over to us, that is really where I think the real crux of the matter has been, because we have taken over a government that has effectively not paid its bills to thousands of Barbadians at an individual basis, as well as various businesses, various obligations. And the truth is that there's been no explanation that has been proffered to the public, in my mind, that explains how does a government hand over to another government $1.9 billion in arrears. Now, of course, we've just ended crop over, and people still want to know where the money gone. Because in effect, what we are trying to do now over the next 3 to 4 years is to repair that one, that arrears position, rebuild investor confidence, rebuild certainly business confidence, and but was at the same time reform the way that government has been delivering the various goods and services that we have been able to provide to the public. And that is no easy task, and certainly within the context of the Ministry of Finance, since Prime Minister Motley was sworn in on May 25th, we have been at work every day trying to make sure that we bring some sense of order to the public finances again. And I can say to you that as a Barbadian, and certainly one who's benefited from, I think, all that Barbados has had to offer, this is a moment where I think all Barbadians must now reflect on the various institutions that we have built up. Because if our system does not work to protect Barbadians, I think then we have to really look at how we are building these systems. Because we must, at any point in time, have the protection, in a sense, of a system that works for ordinary Barbadians. And over the course of the next certainly weeks and months, we are seeking to build a level of consensus that I think will allow the negotiation with the International Monetary Fund and the program that we expect to agree to be successful, simply because the public of Barbados has been engaged on it. And as we said to the fund as we were here last, the success of any program will be determined by the level of engagement that the people have with respect to the way forward. Because with respect to the debt restructuring, we are quite adamant that this has to be a one-time fix on that side, but government also has to make sure, and the people have to make sure, that the system that we build now for accountability has to stand the test of time. And so I don't know who's going to come after me or after us, but the reality is that I think over the next generation, there has to be a serious reckoning, for lack of a better term, in terms of the way that the government operates, the way that the private sector operates. And I think that as a country, this is a unique opportunity for us to really uncover all of those things that we knew needed to be done for 30, 40 years, get them done, move forward, and give the young people of this country an opportunity to move Barbados to another level. So so I'm not as pessimistic as the true state is, because I see real opportunities for growth in the economy, but certainly the seriousness of the situation right now means that we must take care of our business in as quick, as short a time manner as possible. So I'll leave it there.
So the question would be now the way forward. And what we can look at would be, how do we get where we want to go? And maybe we can start with you, Marla. How can we, going forward, based on what has been said, and I can I can review some of these things, but I know that you know most of these things because you keep in contact with what is happening in Barbados, in fact, the entire region. What's the way forward?
So just actually what the minister just discussed is a good segue into my thoughts on the way forward. I mean, he spoke about, quite rightly, making sure that whatever is done now is sustainable, and that we put things in place so we don't find ourselves in this situation again in the next 5, 10, however long. One of the critical things, and I know that the central bank is making an effort in this regard to revise legislation around how monetary policy and
for example, the expansion of the monetary base, which basically we had a doubling of the money supply since 2014, if memory serves me correct. And you would want to make sure that you put the legislation in place to prevent something like that happening again. The other thing I want to highlight that is something that we need going forward is fiscal management, better fiscal management. So the fact that reserves had fallen to where they are now, most people don't realize that that is a function of the fiscal budget and how fiscal management is conducted. Because the more the government spends and spends via fiscal deficit, the more pressure there is on reserves as people import more and consume more. So we need two pieces of legislation or legislative amendments. One to prevent the central bank from financing the government again, as we had under the previous government. And then secondly, we need a fiscal responsibility framework, or as the governor of the central bank in the Eastern Caribbean calls it, a fiscal resilience framework that basically puts limits on how much of a deficit the government can run and how high the level of debt can go to. Now, these, of course, have to be crafted with the proper context of the Barbadian economy and the economic, demographic, social conditions. But I believe we do need these types of frameworks to, first of all, prevent this mistake that the last government basically did, to prevent this from happening again. I think the other thing we really need is to understand that government spending does not generate growth in a meaningful and significant way anywhere in the region, not just Barbados. We really need private sector-led growth. So we need reforms to make the ease of doing business better and easier. We need to promote, the government needs to be a mechanism and a vehicle of putting things in place for business to flourish, not to be in business themselves. And once you have doing business framework that is conducive to doing business efficiently, then businesses will flourish, businesses will hire, and you have growth, and you have basically the same goals that the government thinks they want to carry out. These are the goals that you can have with proper regulation and proper facilitation of the private sector. You can achieve these same goals. So those are the three main things that I think we need to focus on.
Shane, mm-hmm. Your take.
So I think over the last 5 years, the big issue for everybody has really been the reserves. Yes, it's been driven on the fiscal side, but the reserves and the lack of confidence by having reserves continue to fall and, you know, worrying about the exchange rate, those have been big issues. And one of the immediate things that we need to do to stabilize the reserves, not just stabilize, to build the reserves, is to get the IMF program completed. Because you will find that once that happens and countries start to meet the targets on the IMF program, confidence returns. And I always use the example of Jamaica, who borrowed at much better rates than they probably should have been able to borrow in 2014. Primarily because the market had regained confidence in Jamaica and felt like Jamaica was on the right track. The second thing that needs to be done, of course, is that restructuring needs to be completed, simply because having made the announcement to suspend debt payments and to restructure debt, it puts the government in a somewhat of a limbo where it can't really borrow at this point in time from the private sector, but it still needs to run a country. And so that needs to be completed while ensuring that both the external and domestic, but particularly on the domestic side, the stability and the viability of the financial system remains intact. If you look at, I don't want to get into the whole issue of commercial banking and fees and all that, but if you look at our commercial banking sector over the last few years, you realize that the return on assets has been about half or a third of what it has been in some of the markets in the region. And that is even with these banks holding securities that were yielding, 3 to 7%, depending on what they held. So it is obvious, everyone accepts that once this debt is restructured, they will make some losses and they will earn less from that source of income going forward. So that needs to be something that is taken into consideration. But having said that, the debt restructuring being completed quickly is very important, because then it gives the government the room then to be able to continue worrying about other things and not its debt position. The other thing I think is important is also the tourism sector. Now, I didn't get to listen to the press conference yesterday by the Minister of Tourism, but over the last 3 or so years, one of the things I've been noticing is that while tourist arrivals continue to rise, which has been a very positive thing, and we've got record stayover arrivals, the average length of stay of a tourist continues to fall. Mm-hmm. And for example, we had 3% growth in the first half of this year. Expenditure was up 1%. In the first quarter, the governor announced we had about 6% growth, but yet the tourism sector as a whole declined, you know, which is a bit, you think about it, somewhat counterintuitive, right? And it's somewhat related to the mix of tourists. We're not getting the growth in UK tourists as we were before relative to the American tourists. And that's not a Barbadian phenomenon. That's actually a regional phenomenon that I was investigating. But it might also have to do with the type of tourists again as well. So are you getting more persons who are willing to use more different types of accommodation? Is it a demographic issue? I'm not sure. But I think that is something that needs to be considered, because even with tourism doing as well as it, as we say it is from our arrivals perspective, the numbers for spend are not really looking that great. And if we want to organically grow the reserves, as Marla said, that's something we need to look into.
And I would encourage you, and let me just cut here, sorry, Shane, I'll mm-hmm. get back. But, and you can go to the Sunday Sun newspaper on the back page where it has cruise crisis, because I was at that press conference yesterday, and Minister Simmons made it quite plain, in fact, to use his words directly, he made the point that Barbados was facing, and I'm quoting, a catastrophic failure in the whole cruise tourism business. His statement, and this is based on the statistics that they did in audit, was that though Barbados's cruise industry has been on a trajectory of record growth, in fact, in the last several years, in 2017 alone, we had 818,752 cruise passengers, and they came in on 506 ships. Whilst that took place, Barbados only earned $57.3 million. Now, if you go back, to 2014, 2015, and this is from the Florida Caribbean Cruise Association, they reported that during the year 2014, 2015, cruise tourism generated approximately $57 million in direct expenditure for Barbados. $57 million. And when you sit down and you look at what's happening in St. Kitts, which they would have a little bit more people coming in, they earn significantly more. They earn at least $84.3 million. And St. Martin, they earn $422.9 million. Basically, bottom line is that we are not getting any bang for buck. Bang for the bucks that we are involved with when it comes to this whole thing of cruise tourism. And that's because the tourists themselves are saying that our shopping leaves a lot to be desired. Our shoreside welcome leaves a hell of a lot to be desired. The overall prices are extremely high, and the courtesy of store employees is very, very low. And in fact, there were some rankings done, and out of 35, Barbados scored 18 in terms of shopping, 20 in terms of shoreside welcome, 21 in terms of overall prices, and 25 in terms of our courtesy of store employees. And when you go further into this press briefing, he made the point that one of the things that people complained about was the dirtiness of the island, that the country looks untidy with the garbage all over the place. And he really got into it. I took this time out to really bring this here because, and you can see me with the document, that is because I was struck by the amount of negativity that was coming from these reports from the Florida Cruise Association. It really does not give a good report card on Barbados. And because I could not understand why the minister could say, in the face of us getting more and more visitors, that Barbados was facing a catastrophic failure. And when Minister Strawn just now said that Barbados is failing on a number of areas, this certainly is one that is significant. But anyhow, I'm talking a little too much. We have a call on the line, and I think we should take this call now before we go on. You're on Brass Tack Sunday. Good morning.